I had set the alarm, but in my excitement, I awoke a half hour before it rang. At 4 a.m., there were still just slivers of light on the horizon, so I tiptoed out to the living room of our small cabin on Seneca Lake to avoid waking my two younger brothers. Our town of Elmira, New York, was unbearably hot in the summer, so we escaped to a nearby cabin 25 miles away, where the forests worked their natural cooling magic. The cottage where we spent these summers was an abandoned grist mill. Many years before, probably almost 100, an elm tree had taken root on that mill site. My grandfather, a stonemason and carpenter, then lovingly constructed the cottage around its trunk, so it ran right up through the living room as a prominent feature. When it rained, water dripped through the roof, down the bark to a patch of soil nestled amid the stone floor. I often searched for tiny insects inhabiting all the woody fissures. The elm canopy stretched across the entire roof, shading our cottage during summer and standing sentinel with its bare branches in winter. I loved every inch of that tree, right down to the diverse fungi that grew along the trunk when it fell victim to Dutch elm disease. Its special place inside our cabin was always such a comfort, and one of my saddest childhood moments was its death. On a dangerously tall ladder, my grandfather meticulously cut away all the dead branches, leaving the beloved trunk as a statue gracing the center of the cottage. My grandparents would occasionally allow me to harvest one of the flat, tough fungal brackets decorating the dead trunk adjacent to our dining room table. I did my creative best to etch designs and paint images of plants on these living canvases, sometimes called artist fungus. Summer at our rustic cabin was my refuge, where I could explore, observe, and collect, inhaling all the nature my small body could absorb. I carefully shook Mom awake. Then we crept outside before sunrise and quietly drove 5 miles along a dirt road to my favorite birdwatching pond. This nature trip was a huge deal for me. Mom did not even own binoculars, and all she knew about my feathered friends was that starlings sometimes tore up her spring lettuce sprouts, but she knew birdwatching brought immeasurable joy to me at the tender age of 7, and so offered to drive to a special place for the dawn chorus, an exquisite concert sung by a winged choir at sunrise. Our old rambler bounced along a dusty road, through cherry orchards where my brother and I earned money picking fruit, near an old haunted house that made my hair stand on end, past a one-room bar where farmers bragged about their corn. Willows encircled the pond's edge, their roots adapted to soggy soil. A discarded, leaky old rowboat was tied to a branch. I had dreamed all summer of rowing out from the bank to observe egrets or herons. Those majestic birds would garner 5 big stars on my modest bird list if they appeared. When we arrived, my mom worried we were trespassing on some farmer's property, even though there was no house to be seen. So she very reluctantly climbed into that dilapidated dinghy, strewn with spider webs and dusty underpinnings. Away we paddled. This was as close as I ever came to feeling like a princess in a silver carriage, even though it was a rough and tumble contraption full of leaks. We rowed and bailed constantly to keep afloat. Out in the middle of the pond, we stopped paddling and I focused my enormous Sears binoculars. They were ridiculously bulky, felt like they weighed almost as much as I did, and probably were not even capable of focusing. But they made me feel like a professional ornithologist. Much to my amazement, as if on cue, a great blue heron flew in and landed along the shoreline. Even my mom was overcome with awe.
Thank you for listening to this clip provided to you by Macmillan Audio. To hear more, look for this title wherever audiobooks are sold.